When the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Aquí vamos! It's the best soccer show. Jason Davis, and Jared Dubois. We're here. I didn't prep you for that. What'd you think? How'd that go?
I mean, I got enough Spanish that I got by with it. I wasn't okay. Ready. But I'm with you. It's a. People are probably wondering why it's weird. People wonder why it's weird, and you're giving them a hint.
Yeah, we are, just to give everybody the full background on this, and we're recording. I can't remember last time we just recorded an episode like this. It's been a long time, right?
When was the last time we just did a podcast?
Right, because we like to do it live for the people who can respond to us and type weird things that we then see on our
screen. I'm kind of worried that there's a segment of our audience that just gets us on YouTube is going to wonder what the heck happened.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. We'll have to let those people know. But I think most people are podcasting people, and they're going to hear this show, and they're going to wonder, why does it sound all weird, and why did Jason speak Spanish? And the bottom line is that I'm in Puerto Rico right now, visiting the in-laws, introducing my young son, Thiago, to, well, he's met his grandparents already, but they haven't seen him in a while. And also the rest of the family now gets to meet him, and they're very excited. So that's why we're here, and why I sound weird, because I'm actually speaking into a webcam at the moment.
Tell him why. Tell him why.
Well, so I intended to do the you know, have a radio show?
You know, yeah, I listened today because I was driving back down from Paso Robles, and I needed something on satellite radio.
Hold on a second. I have to stop you. I just introduced the show in Spanish. You guys call it Paso Robles? Robles? What do you call it?
Paso Robles?
Oh, I thought you said Robles.
I say Robles because I grew up with the kids that had last name Robles, and that's how they said it. But if you go out there, everyone says Robles.
That's terrible. That's so bad.
I was telling you, it's like people say Nolens and Louisville, where it doesn't look like the way it sounds. I don't know. I say Paso Robles, and that's how I grew up saying it.
But. Yeah, no, I just think it's funny that the gringos stripped the California town names of their actual Spanish background. Like, I was just thinking about Monterey the other day because they're getting a team in the USL Championship, which makes no sense. Let's be upfront about that. But they dropped their new logo and everything, and I've always been told it's Monterey. You don't say it Monterey like you would if it were speaking Spanish, because a bunch of white people live there and they call it Monterey.
Monterey.
Yeah, that too. So I'm in Puerto Rico. I left the connection for my best soccer show microphone at home. Look, we were packing multiple bags. We were packing a stroller. We were packing a car seat. The first time we've ever traveled with Thiago. We didn't know how it was going to go. The flight was at 8 a.m., so there was a very early morning process. And I spaced on bringing my little box that helps me connect the microphone to the computer. I have everything for the radio show, and I'm sure you're going to tell me that just says where my priorities lie. But, you know, let's be honest.
They do, but that's probably the right place for them to be. I mean, I thought we would fall someplace between radio show and child, to be honest with you. But you managed to bring all the child stuff for somehow.
You have to protect him. He's first and foremost. But we did work out a solution to at least do this show. Before the show, I was going to look up to see just how far apart we are physically, Jared, because, you know, it's like one of those things you can feel. Like, I'm normally...
I don't know that we're much farther than we normally are, because I'm usually way south of you, not just to the east. I mean, to the west, excuse me. So you're probably closer on a latitude with me now.
No, definitely not. I don't think that's true.
You think D.C. is
less
north than Puerto Rico is south of me?
No, you might be right. Latitude-wise, I just got latitude and longitude confused because I haven't taken geography in a long time. So latitude is the east to west, and you're saying that we are more on a level plane east to west, but we are now separated further we're farther apart east to west, but we're closer together north and south. That's what
I think.
I
think we might be closer than before.
Yeah, that's very possible.
But again, I my geography is way worse than yours. We've established that many times over the course of the show.
Yeah, you really don't know where anything is, sort of. East of Colorado.
I can't even say Puerto Rico isn't even a flyover place for me because I never fly over that area.
No, you have to have a reason to come down here. Have you ever been to the Caribbean? Now that I think
about
it,
I've been on the Caribbean coast, but ever like any place in the Caribbean.
Oh, so you went to like Mexico, but it was on the coast.
Yeah, like Louisiana, Florida.
Oh, that's the Gulf Coast. That's not the Caribbean.
Yeah, I mean,
remotely close.
The waters are close. I mean, come on.
Oh, say, yeah, I guess technically speaking, sort of the same general big body of water, but you've never been to Puerto Rico, you've never been to the Dominican Republic, you've never been to the Bahamas, anything like that, right?
Only thing I know about those islands is that the U.S. is way better than them in soccer.
That's true, although you do have Trinidad and Tobago in the region, and last time I checked, they beat us to keep us out of the World Cup in 2018. So there's still that. Maybe we're better, but we didn't beat them when it mattered.
Someone tell Mexico.
We did beat Canada on Sunday, and I think we have to talk about that game leading into a wider discussion about the Gold Cup so far, because we haven't talked since the just after the first group stage match. And then we obviously need to get into the new question, which is who does Greg Berhalter call up to help his roster? Because CONCACAF changed the rules again. But listen,
they shouldn't have changed it in the first place. It's a good thing what they're doing. But it was short-sighted in the first place by making a rule change. And we can talk to that when we get to it, though.
Okay, well, that's fair. So we'll talk about the most recent game and leave the Martinique game in the past, because it really didn't inform any – like, it didn't tell us anything, that Martinique game, except that, you know, good to have Darryl Dike get some confidence, good to see James Sands get an opportunity to kind of ease into his spot in this Gold Cup. And, you know, we can talk about what the future might be. But 1-0 over Canada, a goal in the first 20 seconds. Jared, what was your reaction to that goal in the first 20 seconds?
What a first time square ball by Sebastian Legette. That was my reaction. That was a great first time service, just far enough from the goalkeeper to make him commit and couldn't get to it. And great backdoor run by Shaq Moore. So at that point, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
But it proceeded to get very unfun. I say the first 20 minutes were very fun for US supporters. And I think after that, it got weird, because here's what I think happened. I think, to Berhalter's credit, I'm going to give Berhalter credit here for a second. I know it's going to be pissing people off.
This is dangerous. You know, you're going to upset a lot.
I'm going to take a lot of this credit back a little bit later. Okay. But I will give him credit for coming out with a surprising dynamic lineup and formation that no one really saw coming. I think that includes Canada with the 3-5-2 with Sands pushing into midfield.
Okay. That's a fair statement, I suppose, although he did show it at the end of the Martinique game. He did go to that towards the very end of that game. And maybe
you really think that's what Canada was expecting to start against? James Sands in midfield and two men in the back when they're going forward?
I think if John Herdman's a smart guy, then he recognized, the U.S. has no wingers. They finished the game against Martinique with Zardes and DK both on the field. No,
I think a 3-5-2 was to be expected, but not James Sands playing as aggressively forward as he was.
I see.
The top. I think the first 20 minutes, that forced Canada to really reassess the game, and also the goal as well. That's something that no team plans for that early. Canada was shell-shocked. There's a formation or a tactical change. I shouldn't say a formation change.
Sure.
A tactical change that they probably weren't expecting. They get a down early goal. And I think the first 20 minutes, a young USA team rode momentum. I think it's easy for young teams to ride momentum. They have a goal early. They're fueled by adrenaline at that point. They played amazing ball for the first 20 minutes. But as you see with young teams, there's a lot of inconsistency. And I think that eventually came back into the game. And Canada, the more veteran team of the two, started taking a lot more of the pace of the game, the control of the game. And I think almost, and we've seen this before with this team, early goals for the U.S. and a young team, I think, aren't always necessarily a good thing for the 90-minute game. Because I think they too easily come and are worried about protecting that lead.
I tend to agree with you there. I do think that scoring that early changed the mindset of the Americans. Although, as you said, for the first 15 or 20 minutes, they were pressing the ball well. They were playing, everybody was playing high. I think they had 9 players in Canada's half for 15 minutes straight before eventually Canada got their foot on the ball. And I think, you know, some frustration about not being able to convert that pressure into another goal for the United States. And I don't want to make an excuse for them, But it was pretty warm in Kansas City. They did do the hydration break, so it was at least above the threshold that FIFA determines is necessary for that. And they collapsed in terms of fitness and the fatigue level. Just it got out of control in the second half. And if it not for Matthew Hoppe to come on and add some energy, maybe in the last 15 minutes or whatever that was, they were just gassed. And I think it showed in not just their ability to chase Canada down and recover the ball, which they absolutely could not do, but when they got the ball back, just lazy passes. And I think it was concentration, but I think that was an impact of just expending so much in the first 15, 20 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I think the other thing that – I think that 20-minute mark has really ended up being a noticeable thing for the U.S. because, like I said before, I think it took Canada about that long to get into the game. I think it's about that long before the U.S. started losing confidence. But the other big thing that happens during that time is the Walker Zimmerman change.
Yeah,
that really forces – now, James Sands, who was playing fantastic into the midfield, I think now with Donovan Pines back there versus Walker Zimmerman, there's less trust in this team defensively when you're Rock and the captain for the night. Zimmer is taken out. I think Sands isn't as comfortable coming into the midfield, taking more space, because Donovan Pines had a few good moments, but he had some really shaky ones too. So if you're Sands, do you feel as much confidence stepping out of that back line after that?
No, probably not. And I think there was a choice made to drop Busio deeper. And that made Busio way less effective because now he has to do a lot more defensive work because the United States doesn't have the ball. They're trying to recover the ball. Canada's progressing it into the attacking half. And Busio is not a ball winner, right? He's not a guy who gets, you know, who gets 50-50s. So you lost a lot of bite there. They could have shifted Acosta, and I think he did try to track back and play a little bit more defensively. But for whatever reason, again, Canada was able to sort of pass circles around the U.S. The other thing that happened right around that same time frame, Jared, is that Canada swapped Tayshaun Buchanan to the other side. And I think not that, you know, again, the U.S. pressure was the major factor there. And you could see how high Shaq Moore and Sam Vines are playing and how effective they were playing high. But you lose Zimmerman. Everybody kind of goes into a more defensive mindset to cover for the loss of that player. Vines and Moore are now not pressing as high. They're not pinning Buchanan back. They're not pinning Larea back.
Yeah, and Buchanan's getting the ball in much more. He's getting the ball in more forward areas because no one's pushing him back on the U.S. side. So Buchanan was by far Canada's best player on the game, and I think he went back and forth both sides a few times. I'll be surprised if Buchanan's still with New England next year. That kid's destined for better things.
His confidence level is off the charts right now. You can see that he thinks he's going to score every time he touches the ball.
I mean, it's not Alfonso Davies-ish. It's Alfonso Davies in MLS-ish. You know, like that confidence and that to take guys on. I mean, Canada has another great up-and-coming fullback in that team. And it's interesting to see that he was almost the sole lone dangerous threat. I mean, credit where credit's due. I mean, obviously, Akinola goes down with an injury too early. That changes Canada's offensive game plan. Kyle Lahren can't finish the game. Canada had a lot of offensive struggles just by personnel-wise. So Buchanan was forced to take a good deal of the offensive work duties for Canada. But for the U.S., I think this game was not full of standouts, except for Sands and I think Miles Robinson. I think there's only two takeaways for me that were positives in this lineup over 90 minutes. And do you feel anyone else stood out to you besides them?
No, definitely not. I think Legette was okay and passable considering the circumstances of the game, but he wasn't good. I don't think Acosta was good. I think,
listen, Zardes isn't a second striker, man.
No. No,
it doesn't work. Zardes ends up pulling out to the wing, and he's just not comfortable out there. You can see it. He's
yeah,
not comfortable taking guys one-on-one.
Figuring out where the space was supposed to be for those guys, I think, was a major problem. And that's why, you know, look, it's Canada. It's the third group stage match. You know you're already progressing. It's just a matter of winning the group or not. And I do get that you kind of, you know, you want to win the group because you want to be able to say we won the group. And also it had the knock-on effect of avoiding Mexico in that side of the bracket until the final, if you get there. But I thought that maybe, and look, fitness-wise, experience-wise, I get it. But I thought that Matthew Hoppe was a better choice from the start of the game. It's just that, again, he chose a guy he can trust who is match fit because he's playing in MLS season, whereas Hoppy is still in preseason form, hadn't played a meaningful game in a couple of months, and, you know, is also still a kid. So I get it. It was just frustrating.
Yeah, I think Mike Hoppy was the much better choice at that, if you're going to have a tandem striker with Daryl DK. But Berhalter's a guy that, as a fault, is loyal to guys. And Zardes has his loyalty. He has his confidence. And for some reason, he just feels that he's going to do whatever the game plan is. I get it as a head coach. You want a guy that's going to be out there executing the game plan. But for the rest of us that don't understand what was told to him before the game, it doesn't make sense. I don't see what he's bringing. I see what he could bring as a striker in the center of a three-man front line. I don't see what he brings as the support striker in a two-man system. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe DK isn't the one he's supposed to be supporting. Maybe there is no designation there. But I see a miss if you have a big body of Daryl DK up there not stretching defense constantly. Having him have the check back in, just like he and Zars are both checking back into the ball, I don't know, man. I just don't feel that there was a good relationship there. You saw when Hoppy was on the field with him, Martinique, a lower class opponent, but Hoppy's fast work rate was making opportunities for second balls and for good deliveries into the head of Daryl DK that we did not see in Canada.
Yeah, well, Matthew Hoppy's definitely a more technical player than both DK and Zardes. So you can, I mean, Daryl DK can find space. He can create a shot. I think Zardes is not quite as good at that, but can also do those things. But if you want a guy who's got the ball in close spaces, who's got to beat a player off the dribble, who's in space and has defenders in front of him, you want Matthew Hoppy with the ball. You don't want either Zardes or DK with the ball. And we saw that a couple times when chances kind of went wasted because you have these big body guys who can do a lot of things very, very well, but not that. Trying to figure out, again, who was going to do what in this game. I don't know that I'm dinging Daryl DK all that much for that performance. You know, he tried hard. I don't think his fitness level is great right now either. He obviously had a bit of a knock where you wondered if he was going to come out of the game. You hope he's ready. It's a week, you know, of recovery before you play that quarterfinal on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know many shoulder injuries that are good in a week, though. You know,
this is true. If it is a separated shoulder, that was my first thought because the way he went down, and if you've ever separated your shoulder, it's not a dislocation. It's not like the ball coming out of the socket.
I've done it. It was 6 weeks for me, and that was just to be able to move it.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, look, obviously a sport where he doesn't have to use it quite as much. So maybe 6 weeks is on the timetable. Well, I still can't, like, I can't throw a disc right to this day when I play disc golf because of my separated shoulder when I was 21 years old.
Yeah. I separated my shoulder when I was 17, and it was maybe the most painful thing I've ever dealt with in sports. And I think, you know, you say he might not need it as much, but man, you saw him toss defenders off,
yeah,
which he uses those shoulders and those arms, and his physique is part of his game. So if he can't use it,
I'll be surprised to see DK back in this tournament, to be honest.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, look at how much pain he was in.
Yeah, he continued, but it certainly wasn't comfortable.
I think of the injury concerns that we got from this game and Walker Zimmerman and Daryl DK, I'm far more positive about Walker Zimmerman. Potentially he walked off on his own. I just think maybe it's precautionary. And whereas DK looked like he was in actual pain.
Huh. Well, I got the sense that Zimmerman's might have been one of those knee injuries where it doesn't be, adrenaline is pumping. For whatever reason, you walk off the field like it's not that big of a deal. And then we find out later, oh, yeah, there's a tear and he needs surgery and he might be out.
He didn't go back to the, he didn't go to the locker room. Didn't see him with ice on it on the sideline. He was on the bench all the way to the end. I don't know. I don't really want to speculate too much, but I'm a little more concerned with Daryl DK right now than Zimmerman. I mean, that might be a function of the striker position as well. But here's the unfortunate thing. The two biggest holes in U.S. men's national team full lineup were at center back and striker, and the guys you were auditioning for that were Walker Zimmerman and Daryl DK, and they're both now potentially out injured for the knockout phases of this tournament where you could really learn something about them.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think Miles Robinson has shown enough that there are certain games in the octagonal where I wouldn't freak out if he got an opportunity to play.
Oh, I agree, but we all know that the two big guys that were auditioning were Zimmerman and DK, though. You know, you can say Zardes can help it for. Yeah, he can. Matthew Hoppy can start. But I think the people everyone wanted to see from this camp at those two positions were Walker Zimmerman, Darryl Dike. Because Walker Zimmerman, MLS defender of the year last year, for some reason, not favored by Berhalter. Maybe this tournament was where he was going to turn his head. Had a great first couple games. Looked good starting into this one. So I think for me, he was the guy I thought could potentially help most quickly, if that's a, is that even good grammar, most quickly with the full national team at the defensive end. With him potentially now gone, Miles Robinson definitely looks the best, and I think he had a good game. It was nice to be able to see him step out of Zimmerman's shadow a little bit and run the back line, because I think he was definitely the most consistent. But James Sands has probably been, next to Shaq Moore, the standout player of this tournament so far. His pass rating, his percentage is so good. And do you know he hasn't committed a foul this whole year, this whole season, this whole cup so far?
No, I did not know that.
He has not committed a foul, but despite playing in the center defense and the midfield at times, that's really impressive, especially with the challenges that he's gone in on. So maybe the guy we ended up walking away from this all was James Sands. And the question is he a center back or is he a midfielder?
Yeah, I think that's a question. But I think Berhalter also values versatility, and you're going to need that. Rosters with players who can play in multiple spots or better rosters, because you're going to deal with injuries. You're going to deal with, again, fatigue during World Cup qualifying when you got three games in a week. So I'm okay with bringing a guy who looks comfortable in a couple of different spots. Now, I don't know that you want to start James Sands against Mexico in the center of defense, but I'm okay with him getting an opportunity to play certain games.
I'm more intrigued by seeing, we've been talking for a while, like the Tyler Adams backup, And I'm not saying that this guy is the guy right now, but he surprised me the most. I mean, if you talk about Jackson Yule and what he's done this tournament to convince you versus James Sands, Sands is far more convincing to me. And I would even put Busio ahead of him in terms of being convincing.
Well, so this is actually what I wanted to do. And I know you want to talk about maybe some injury replacements with the CONCACAF rule change. And we'll get to that, kind of outline what's going on with that, because I think it is something that longtime watchers of the Gold Cup will know about, but maybe recent people don't really understand what's going on here, and we'll get to that. But I, since you were talking about Sands and you were talking about DK and talking about auditioning, and I do think that everything about this tournament for the United States has to be viewed through the prism of World Cup qualifying and not winning the tournament for the tournament's sake, as nice as that would be. And look, I'm not going to be naive and think that the fan base and certain people out there who are listening to us right now won't come down hard on Berhalter if they get skunked in a semifinal.
And listen, I propped up Berhalter earlier. He was tragic in his subbing these last a couple of games. And the midfield needed a sub at halftime or even by the 50th minute. And however, did not make that sub. And you have to hold him accountable to that.
Okay. However, this is not me saying this is what's happening. But the only thing I can reason out with that, because I thought the same damn thing. I'm watching that game. The United States falls off a cliff in around the 20th minute. They get to halftime. Everybody on Twitter is just like, oh, man, they just got to get into that locker room, and Berhalter's got to change something, and he's got to talk them up. And they come out with the same lineup, and I'm thinking, okay, what's the deal here? Maybe, well, a couple of things. One, you don't have to win the game to advance, right? You have that luxury. It'd be nice to win the group. Don't get me wrong. You certainly don't want to lose to Canada again, and you don't want to do it on home soil, et cetera, et cetera. But you do have that card in your back pocket. You lose, you still move on. I also wonder if with this group, and this is definitely cover for Berhalter, and it's very nice to have this luxury as well. What if he's just saying, I want them to figure it out. I'm not going to get too stressed about changing tactics, adding a body to midfield, bringing in more energy, especially at halftime, because what I want to see is if this group can respond in the moment, especially considering that you've got Busio and Sands and now Donovan Pines and Shaq Moore and Sam Vines on the field and Darryl Dike up top. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, that's fine and all, but then come out and say, because the fan base, we think, because what is being said is they're here to win, right? They're here to win this tournament. It's right, not, but we're here roster, to check some check some things
the
out.
The roster sends the message of what he's trying to do, even as he's not going to say, well, we don't really care about winning.
I think that's one of the fan pieces issue is that he's not owning the fact of what this actually is.
Well, I definitely think that Berhalter is more honest about his approach than any coach we've maybe ever had. I don't know if that's, you know, it's enough for people to be satisfied. I think there are lots of people who just don't think Greg Berhalter knows what he's doing. And that's obviously always going to be the case with any manager, any national team head coach. But I think there are a lot of people who maybe will say, well, he's good at the relationship stuff and he's good at the team building stuff and he's good at the recruiting stuff. But maybe he's not good at the tactical stuff. Maybe he's not good at the in-game stuff.
The subbing,
I think the game management is a thing, a problem.
The subbing is a thing consistently through his tenure so far.
That's true.
I struggled to think of too many games where he's made an impact sub. You know, it, or if he does, it's way too late. I mean, he's a Gareth Southgate of the U.S. Just like Southgate, the same thing. If you watch the Euros with England, waiting too long for subs. I just don't understand. With five subs now, you get to do what is the harm in injecting life into a game? And I get the like you said, trying to learn something, trying to challenge these guys to do something. But man, I almost feel like he needs to audition more than these players do a bit. You know, like show us you're the guy.
Yeah. I wanted to go through, this is what I wanted to do. After the group stage, three games played, obviously a bit of rotation from Haiti to Martinique and now to Canada. I want to go through these names and you tell me if they've improved their stock potentially for the qualifying period or if they've taken a step back. Okay. All right. Let's start with Kellen Acosta.
Up until the last game, I thought it was up. So I'm still going to say it's an up. I think what he does is bring a lot of energy, and he closes down balls fast. But second half, he struggled. He was absent. Mm. He didn't have the energy, it looked like, that he had in the first half. So I will say up, but only slightly.
Okay. Paul Arriola got hurt in the first game. I'm going to skip him.
Yeah.
George Bello.
Up. I don't think he's had too many opportunities to show, but I think in the one opportunity he did have, one good opportunity, I thought it's up. But he was starting from a lower position than Vines from the first place.
Yeah, I think he's behind Vines. I think he probably still is behind Vines, but I think he's improved his stock. Gianluca Busio.
Up. Very up.
Okay. I think it's up. I do think you have to be careful with how you deploy him. He's not a ball winner, as we talked about already. So if you are going to play a single pivot and you don't know if you're going to have the ball or you risk the other team coming at you in waves, he gets overwhelmed pretty quickly. I don't think his passing was all that great yesterday in that match.
I think his first touch passing is pretty good a lot of the time. I think sometimes he tries to squeeze some things out a little too close that don't have to be, whereas Sebastian Jess is much far more the safer distributor and wouldn't always do the sexy thing. But with Busio, I think, especially in the Canada game, there was a domino effect. Like we said, by Zimmerman going out and Sands not being able to step as much into the midfield, that falls makes Busio and Legette fall further back into the field. And that goes all the way up to Zardes and Diki not being able to be effective with service. And there's too much of a disconnect between the strikers and the midfielders. So there is a definite effect that the Walker Zimmerman substitution had on everything along that spine. And that includes Busio.
That's fair. Reggie Cannon has only played a little bit as a sub yesterday.
Flat.
Okay. Daryl Dike.
Up. I think you want to see him score goals. He's scored a couple. I think his struggles, I think, have been somewhat Greg Berhalter's fault in terms of what he's put around him. I don't think putting Zardes next to him was setting him up for success. But I think he's a monster in the air, and I think he's still a little suspect with the ball at his feet.
Nicholas Giacchini.
I would say flat.
Just, I don't, again, not deployed the way that I think he is.
He hasn't been played to his strengths. Yeah. I think we've seen some things with him in the European gate friendlies over the last year. I think what I've seen is consistent what I saw there.
Okay.
He's in the mix.
Matthew Hoppe, definitely an improvement.
Up. I mean, I've been wanting to see this because that energy up front is what I feel like a player like Daryl Dike needs around him. Someone that's going to do all that work so he can keep pushing and getting physical and find little spaces to be dangerous in the air.
Yeah, he had the ball to Dike for the goal against Martinique, which was a lovely cross. I want to also say, I think it was his parents who showed up to watch him in Kansas City, very excited. They were wearing Schalke jerseys. You know about my rule, Jared. Don't wear the jersey of a team that's not playing in the game. I'm making an exception for family. I don't know if I've ever actually spoken that into existence, but as the rules about jersey wearing go, you get a pass if you're family.
I thought you were going to say don't wear the jersey of a team that was relegated.
Well, that might be. He's still a Schalke player. That's not can't. You know, he's not moving on yet. When he does move, then yeah. Jonathan Lewis. I don't even know if he's
down.
Okay. I don't think it was anywhere. Like, how can you go down from zero? He was zero
down from where Berhalter sees him. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. Your boy, the boy, Sebastian Legette.
I'm gonna say flat. I think he's had good games. I think he hasn't shown you anything you didn't already know about him. I think he's still to date the only player that's played every game for Berhalter. I think that's going to probably continue. Berhalter likes him. He does all he doesn't do anything too flashy. He does a lot of stuff well. But I think he's just doing what he's supposed to do. I don't think he's increased his stock during this.
Yeah, I think he's going to be in the mix for qualifying. That's kind of a certainty. I know that that does frustrate some of the anti-MLS crowd that's out there. But you don't have a
Is he the best midfielder. U.S. men's national team MLSer? Is there a better MLS player? I guess DK right now is MLS.
DK so. Would be in that discussion, I think, at this point. But
Aaron Long, if he was healthy.
Yes, definitely Aaron Long if he was healthy. Walker Zimmerman would be in the discussion, I think, even though he hasn't been a fixture in the team. If you're just talking about his form in MLS and how good he's been. All right, let's move on. Shaq Moore, there's no doubt there.
Up. I mean, I don't think there's anyone that's increased more. Sands is close. But for me, Shaq Moore, I said it last time and we put it out on Instagram and Twitter. I think this has sealed Julian Araujo's fate to go to Mexico.
Yes, you did say that. I think you're probably right. I think it may have been already sealed before Shaq Moore emerged at this tournament. But I guess my question would be, do sort of a mini ranking here. What does the depth chart at right back look like right now?
It's Dest. And for me, it's still Reggie Cannon, just because he's a more proven product and we've seen enough out there. But I'm not going to say it's by a good stretch. And then I'm going to say it's probably Yedlin than Shaq Moore. But those three are so close in where they are that it could be a couple games could put any one of those guys ahead of the other one. It's Sergio Dest tier one, and you've got three guys in tier two, and they're all really close. But what I'll say about the Julian Araujo thing is this is why you take a call up, because Shaq Moore in just a couple games has us thinking about him potentially being Sergio Dest's backup. He could have jumped potentially to number two, and he wasn't even on the radar before. So this is why you maybe do take the call up and just say, I'm good enough. I'm going to force Greg Berhalter's hand and start this discussion.
What I think is interesting is that you have different profiles for your options here. And by the way, I should mention Brian Reynolds. He's got to get playing time at Roma before he's in the conversation, but he's out there, right?
He played half a game in the preseason this week. But yeah, he's got to have minutes.
Okay. But if you're talking about Dest, who can also play on the left, and again, that's where Berhalter leans, although you have at least one or two options on the left now. Dest is obviously an attacking fullback. You either set up a system to play him at wingback because you want to cover for him defensively, or you play him as a fullback in a four-man back line, knowing that you don't necessarily have to be as defensively sound on his side.
And then, I'll say this, if in terms of a wingback conversation, I know he plays a lot of midfield for DC, but Paredes it could be an option if we start talking about wingbacks of the future.
Yes, sir. That's an MLS player, young, just starting out. Definitely the one to watch, but he's not in the mix yet. But what I was going to say is that Reggie Cannon presents a different profile. Reggie's not bad going forward, but he's not Sergio Dest, and I don't think he's Shaq Moore either. I think Shaq Moore is more dynamic and makes better runs.
I think Yedlin's better than going forward as well.
Okay, fair enough. Yedlin is certainly, because of the speed, dangerous, getting in behind. You know, you just want Yedlin to maybe be a little bit better with his crossing.
I know Reggie Cannon mishit the ball that came out to the 18, but he finished that ball left-footed a couple games ago during the Nations League, you know? So I don't want to say that he can't produce going forward. I just don't think it's what he does best. He defends best. He's probably the best defender we talked about.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying the different profile for Reggie Cannon as opposed to the other guys who are definitely more forward-thinking players. Next up is Donovan Pines.
While he's gone up slightly, it's barely. I think he's shown a couple of good things, but what it's really shown me is that he can contribute, but he is not international caliber yet.
No, I think that's fair. I think he was an interesting call-up for Berhalter. Look, obviously you've got center backs in Europe that you can't call up. I mean, not just John Brooks. It's Mark McKenzie. It's Chris Richards. There are guys that may be in the mix and qualifying who weren't available. You look down the depth chart in a Major League Soccer and you're okay, well, he could have called up Henry Kessler. He chose not to. I'm not sure what that's about. There are a couple of other players in that sort of vein, 22, 23-year-old center backs that he could have called up. He chose Donovan Pines. But not ready at this level. Miles Robinson is the other one. And he's improved his stock probably almost as much as Sands and almost as much as Moore.
I would say he's third amongst those three, yeah. But definitely those are the three, and then it's a pretty good drop to everyone else. I think Zimmerman could have been in that conversation. We'll see if we get if he gets more minutes. I would have put Zimmerman ahead of Miles Robinson up until the injury and not knowing what else he would have done in that game, because Miles Robinson had the opportunity to step up in that. So I think both those guys are doing well, but Robinson is up for sure.
How did you feel Robinson does with the ball? Because that's obviously
You know, it's funny. I'm still waiting to be really impressed with his passing and distribution, because that's what you hear so much about him. I've been more impressed by his tackling and his defensive positioning than I have been with his ball distribution. I think Sands is doing a much better job, and I thought Zimmerman was doing a better job over the first few games. So maybe it's a young player that's not confident in that being his role, because everyone knows, look at Donovan Fiennes. When you try to do something fun, you get put in bad situations when you're last man back. You know, and maybe Robinson's just trying to keep it simple stupid here.
I think that's probably fair. First real international experience. I also think that you've mentioned two setups where there's a better ball playing guy next to him, whether it's Sands, who's also a midfielder and maybe naturally more of a midfielder, so definitely better on the ball. And then Zimmerman, who showed it in the first game of the tournament and obviously has just been proven to be a pretty good player in terms of distribution. So while you definitely need Miles Robinson to help pull apart a defense and open up some spaces, if you're looking for the guy who's going to play the ball on the deck, cut out lines, that's Sands or Zimmerman, right? It's not Miles. It's not Miles Robinson first. He's sort of a second option in that, right?
Yeah, I think he can do it, but you're right. That's not the guy that I'm looking as a default to do it.
Yeah. Matt Turner is the name. Oh, no, James Sands. But again, we've already talked about Sands quite a bit. Up. So, yeah. And I also skipped Christian Roldan, who I think has only played a little bit against Canada. I don't know if he played against Martinique.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I'll say this. I haven't been as impressed with him with the short minutes he's gotten with the U.S. team as I have been with Seattle this season. But I also think he has been put in a position to get a good run at being impressive.
Yeah, he's sort of like the second option to Legette. Not quite as good attacking-wise, but obviously a pretty good defender as a midfielder.
Yeah, I think he's a better defender than Legette, but I think you're right. I think in terms of passing and creating opportunities going forward, and honestly, Sebastian Legette scored a lot of goals, you know, but he's also had the opportunities too. If Christian Roldan had those minutes, maybe he would have done it as well. Who knows?
Matt Turner is the other guy here, the next guy here.
Yeah, up. I think he's looked really good. Obviously, he's still suspect with the ball at his feet. I think he did pretty well with that. He kept it simple. He booted a lot of balls out. I think he knows what he's good at and what he's not. It's not like you see with Stefan or Horvath where they're trying to play out the ball out of the back in pressure. I think if there's no pressure, he'll do it. But if there's pressure, he's keeping it simple, stupid too, and he's putting it up the field.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe against Haiti, he was thinking, okay, I've got to be a little trickier here. I've got to try some Zach Stefan stuff. No, Matt, you don't need to do that. Let's just get the ball out, at least for now.
DK up top, you can boot it out more.
Yeah, that's true. Sam Vines is next.
I'm going to say flat because I think he's been up and down. And I think in the end, it's kind of flat. I think his Canada performance was probably his best one so far this tournament. But that's also being said, he had a stinker earlier in the tournament as well. So I'm going to say flat on Sam Vines, which is unfortunate. Well, he had a chance to really kind of make a case for being the second left back if Anthony Robinson doesn't perform.
Well, I think he's definitely in the mix to maybe get minutes during qualifying, even behind Dest if he plays left back and Robinson. I think, and there's talk of him maybe getting a move overseas. I'm not sure if he's been distracted by that. He's still a young player. He scored the goal against Haiti. He's been the rest of the way. So I think flat's a fair description. Jackson Yule, who came on late against Canada.
I think I'm gonna say down, and granted, he wasn't really up in my opinion in the first place. But the reason I'm saying down is because three other dudes have been more impressive at his position. Sands has been more impressive. Williams has been more impressive, and Busio has been more impressive when they've gotten the chance to play in that position. I think Jackson Yule has been fourth best at the position that he was supposed to be the starter at in this tournament. So it has to be down for him.
I think he might be the biggest down on this list if you're looking at this. And for the reasons you said, not just because he hasn't been great, but because the guys that have stepped up in his stead, and Busio was always going to get a chance, they've all outplayed him.
I think we'll really know what Berhalter thinks about his performance so far when we see what happens in a – what lineup does he put out in a knockout game? Because this Canada game, in the end, didn't have to be won. So next game where you have to win and you've got a potentially a center back missing behind you, does Greg Berhalter go to what has traditionally been his blanket, which is Jackson Ewell? Or does he keep being kind of more aggressive and letting a younger player show what they can do and put a Williams in there or Busio again in there or Sands even? But the problem is if you put Sands in there, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the injuries, that means you're starting Donovan Pines. And I just don't think that that's going to happen.
There's another option here. And I know we talked about him fading in the game against Canada and a week's rest maybe will do him some good. I think Kellen Acosta is better suited to play. If you play a single pivot, you play a lone defensive midfielder, I'd rather see Kellen Acosta there. You can still get Busio on the field. He can play higher. Yeah. Or you can create, you know, a triangle there that interchanges a little bit. But if you're looking for the guy who's going to be the defensive midfielder, I'd rather have Acosta than Busio or Jackson Ewell for that matter. Certainly Jackson Ewell for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think I didn't mention him when I was talking about where Jackson Ewell was now. But, yeah, I put Kellen Acosta in front of him as well.
Okay. Jossie Zardes, who, you know,
I think
was always in the mix.
He had a well-taken goal, you know, and I just think that, unfortunately, I don't see him grabbing as much. He's good in moments, but I don't think he's good in games. Is that fair? Do you know what I mean? I think he has a moment here or there where I think, oh, okay, that's good. But I think for great stretches of the game, he works hard. But I feel like he's just wasting calories out there. It doesn't like he's working hard for a goal. And I don't mean that just like in the net. I mean for a goal for the team. Like what is the what's coming from his all the running and stuff that he's doing out there? Whereas Hoppy goes out there, he's more active, and I feel he actually creates something when he's out there.
I'd have to go back and really watch Zardes' performance in that regard and focus on him. But I think that's largely true. I think he does a lot of running. I think he is asked to be the first presser, and that's, you know, that's part of the job when you're a center forward. And I think he puts a game effort in, but he's not nimble enough to make it really count or make it matter. And then when you put him in front of goal or you get him in the box, look, he's good, as you said, he's good for a finish against Martinique. That's well taken. He's got some of those. He's also sort of the reason he's known for bundling the ball in off of body parts that aren't really his intention is because he kind of does have that clumsy way about him. And he bobbles balls and he has poor touches. He doesn't always have a bad first touch, but he does show up at bad times. And sometimes it eliminates opportunities because the ball just, you know, it gets an extra yard away from him and he can't catch up. And now it's 50-50 instead of an opportunity to score. And that's a frustrating thing about him. He's about 90% of the way there where we can trust him most of the time, but we can't.
And to be fair, DK has a lot of those same qualities. He just hasn't been doing it for 4 years.
This is fair.
That's where the frustration comes with Zardes, that is maybe not there with DK, because you're willing to forgive a new player that's fresh out of college that looks like he can still do everything and has a couple of those things out there. We just want to see him start cleaning that up as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, so that's everybody, plus minus in terms of stock rising or falling. And now, again, the group stage is over. The United States wins the group. They'll go into a quarterfinal matchup. A lot of people will probably already know who their opponent is by the time they listen to this, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on Costa Rica and Jamaica, Jared, but we do now know that CONCACAF is going to allow some medical changes to the roster going into the knockout rounds. Now, just some context. Again, if you're new to the Gold Cup, this used to be a thing. Like, it was always the deal. You played the group stage, and then you would go to CONCACAF and say, well, yeah, we need some other bodies. And then Tim Howard or Josie Althor or Michael Bradley or somebody else would sort of ride in just for the knockout rounds. That would eliminate some missed games for them in Major League Soccer. And then the U.S. would go on and, you know, do whatever they did in the rest of the tournament. This was not supposed to happen this year because of competitive integrity, because it was always a weird rule to start. But as you said at the beginning of the show, Jared, it kind of makes more sense now because of COVID restrictions, travel restrictions, all kinds of stuff.
That's hit some of these teams.
We're okay with it coming back. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. There's no number set this time. It's not like CONCACAF is saying 3 changes, 5 changes, 2 changes. They're basically saying, like, bring us your guys, and we'll decide if you can replace them.
Yeah, and I was reading Jeff Carlisle's reporting on this, and I didn't see anything in there on a number. But what it does have to be, and there's a couple people out there I think that were misinformed earlier, where they're talking about, oh, you're going to bring the Stars in now. Like, it has to be from the 60-man preliminary roster.
Right.
Like, you can't bring Pulisic. You can't bring McKennie or Adams. Like, those guys are out. It has to be from the 60-man original roster, which now makes sense. And at the time, remember, we were thinking, it was so stupid. Why they have a 60-man roster? Not with it, knowing that they weren't going to put any allow people to come back in after the first round. Now it sounds like maybe it was always a contingency, and that's why the teams do it, and we just didn't know. But I think it's worth saying, who are the key players already in the 23 that we think we might lose due to injury that may have to be replaced right now?
Well, so Zimmerman for sure. Oh, well, you don't think Zimmerman's
potentially
all that
banged up. Let's talk potential. Let's talk just potential.
So potentially it could be Zimmerman, Areola, and
DK.
I suppose you could put DK on that list as well.
I think those are the safe three that we think that may have to be replaced. Anyone else that you've ever heard about knocker? I don't remember anyone else.
Somebody else went down for a little bit against Canada, but I think got
Sands was cramping.
Okay, Sands is cramping, but we expect him to be fine with that. Get some electrolytes in the boy, and we'll move on. All right, so, I mean, we can talk about three, and if you want to talk about replacing those three players, we can do that.
Okay, because so if you're going to replace Walker Zimmerman, you're looking for a center back. And
Hold on.
Go ahead.
You don't have to bring another center back in.
No, but I think with Zimmerman, you kind of do it, or else I really think that you're stuck playing a four-man back line then. If he wants to keep playing a three-man back line, or five, depending how you want to think of it, then I don't think Donovan Pines is the guy.
Okay.
You know, I don't think he's at the level where – do you want to play Mexico with Donovan Pines at center back?
No. I'm with you on that. I'm just leaving open the possibility that Berhalter looks at this and goes, okay, yeah, we're losing a center back, but if we add another midfielder or a winger, because he could use these spots to bring in wingers, add some width, which also will help you play a four-man back line.
Yeah, and I think bringing a guy in as well, if you bring a center back because, again, let's say another guy gets hurt. Now you don't really have a sub for center back. So I think it's important to bring someone in. So the choices at the defender are Austin Trusty, Kevin Paredes, Henry Kessler, Julian Araujo, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Justin Shea, Kyle Duncan, Chase Gasper, Jonathan Gomez, and Aaron Herrera.
Okay, let's do them individually.
Let's just go to the center backs. The center backs are the only thing that really matter, right?
Give me the center back names, and I'll tell you yes or no in terms of bringing
Henry Kessler.
That's the possibility. I would say that is a very strong possibility.
That's the standout to me as well when I look at this list. He started again. He looks like he's got a spot back with New England. Cameron Carter-Vickers.
I'm going to say no, only because I don't know if his club situation is settled. And obviously they're in preseason training in the English Championship. He may have – can you find out real quick if Cameron Carter-Vickers has a club lined up right now? Because if he is clubless, I don't think you call him up. Because he needs to be over there for whatever trial opportunities might present themselves.
Unless you think it's going to help him, you know, and see.
Yeah, but I don't think coming across the Atlantic in the middle of the COVID situation.
It looks like Celtic is interested, but I don't see that he has an actual.
The other thing about Cameron Carter-Vickers is that he very much like Donovan Pines, although he's definitely a more experienced defender and I would trust him more, he is not good with the ball. I don't want Cameron Carter-Vickers on the ball in this tournament. If you're playing against a team that can obviously hurt you with turnovers, which nearly happened against Canada, or is going to murder you on counterattacking opportunities, yeah, or break you down the way that Mexico can.
Strong on the ball, you know, strong in the tackle. But I agree with you in terms of if you want to have a distributing center back line, I don't think that he's the guy. I think Henry Kessler falls a little bit more into that. I wouldn't say it's his strength either. But I think he's a little bit more well-rounded in that regard. The other one to talk about here, Justin Shea.
Well, and Austin Trusty, since you went past him too.
Oh, I did. I apologize.
I don't know why Austin Trusty was on the 60 man. To be honest with you, that's a weird one to me. I'm going to leave that alone. Justin Shea is a no because he's still a kid who has like two MLS appearances under his belt at this point. And I guess I know he trained at Bayern Munich, and I know they wanted to buy him, and he probably is going to go to Europe at some point, but that's not the guy you call up for the knockout rounds of the Gold Cup, no matter what kind of level you're playing.
Yeah, I think it's a two-man race, and I think it's between Henry Kessler and Cameron Carter-Vickers if you're actually going to bring a center back. And I think Henry Kessler right now noses him out.
Logistically, it just doesn't make any sense to call CCV. It just doesn't. Even if
Bruce Arena's going to put up a fit. Bruce Arena's going to put up a fit.
That's very possible.
Now you got Matt Turner and you got his center back.
Do you think that Greg Berhalter doesn't call Henry Kessler because he's scared to make that phone call?
I think you have Brian McBride make it for him. Isn't he mostly the guy that works for the clubs?
Yeah, Brian McBride has to call up Bruce and say,
"Hey, Bruce, you remember that time I bled for you? Bruce, I'm going to need you to pay me back.
We need Henry. We got to call up Henry. Sorry."
Here's the interesting thing: who's the better center back at New England, Henry Kessler or Andrew Farrell? Obviously Andrew Farrell not on this roster, you know, but just the conversation.
I think that's probably a wash. Like, to be fair to Farrell, he's a decent player, but he's never
converted center back.
Yeah, right. Former fullback. He's never really shown like all star level. And Kessler's a younger guy in his second full year, right? Second year of professional play. Last year was the pandemic, so how do you even judge him on that? I think they're probably about level at this point, but Kessler has the higher potential.
Okay, so we have two potential forwards that we need to replace, maybe a center and a more of a winger. I'm going to give the midfielders and the forwards here because we may end up, who knows, Berhalter may do 1-1. So let's go through. I'll give you the names of the midfielders and the forwards here. Okay. Midfielders, Leon Flock, Cole Bassett, Johnny Cardoso, Caden Clark, Julian Green, Jordi Mihailovic, Moises Naiman, Andres Pereira, Memo Rodriguez, Hassani Dotson, Tanner Tessman. Forwards, and obviously a couple of these guys are interchangeable at these positions. Mason Toy, Robbie Robinson, Ricardo Pepi, Chris Mueller, Jesus Ferreira, Jeremy Abobase, Kay Cowell, Corey Baird, Frankie Amaya, and Josie Altidore.
There are lots of options in these areas for the attacking end of the field, obviously. There are a couple of guys who can play both wide and centrally, and that would make them a little more versatile. Obviously, if you are losing DK, you might have to bring in, although he brought a bunch of center forwards already. Yeah. So he doesn't really have to replace DK, although that might mean defaulting to Zardes as the lone striker, which I don't think anybody is super enthusiastic about.
Are we going to say we don't think that Caden Clark is going to go? Wasn't there injury concern with Caden Clark?
Caden Clark had an appendectomy right as the roster was being announced. So he's recovered from that. He is fascinating to me. If this was my choice, if I'm living in dream world, who do I want to call in? Caden Clark, Cade Cowell. You could also you could give me Kevin Paredes, and I think I'd be happy with that or interested.
I'll say this too. I'm personally taking Tanner Tessman out of this mix. Given he just signed with Venezia, I don't think that he's going to be available to come to this.
He doesn't have the right profile anyway. I mean, that's a two-way midfielder. You're not calling up another two-way midfielder at this point when you have Williamson and Acosta and Legette and all these other guys.
So if you're going to pull, you'd do Caden Clark and who? Kay Cowell?
Well, so there's a Obobese is also interesting to me. He just scored on the weekend. I don't know that he's quite back to his original level, the one that got him some hype as a potential.
Josie Altidore just scored this weekend too.
That one to me is the best story. It's not that I think Josie is going to be massive during World Cup qualifying, although I think he could be useful. The man is still a beast in the box, and you saw it with that goal this weekend against Orlando. I don't think he's a 90-minute player at the international level for sure. But tell me I have Josie Altidore on the bench late in the game to lean on some center backs and make their life hell. I might be enticed by that.
But that's another center forward where we've already said they brought too many center forwards, right?
I know. You don't bring Josie Altidore, I don't think. You have all these other center forwards.
I don't think the tournament means enough that you bring him in. I think, if anything, Josie Altidore just got back to Toronto, playing for Toronto.
I know.
Like, literally just got back. I don't think that's the move.
He's 10 minutes fit.
If I'm going to pick two to replace Areola and DK, I'm going Chris Mueller, and
that's an out and out winger, which is why you're bringing you call
exactly
him
because it's been apparent though it's a missing piece out here. So I think you have to bring a winger now. Whether that's Kate Cal for you or Chris Mueller for me, I'm going Chris Mueller just because I think he needs more of a chance. Kate Cal's time will come.
Yes,
and then to fill a center midfield, I'm still going to pull a center forward, but I'm going to bring a center forward that's different than the center forwards that they already have. I'd say Jesus Ferreira.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because I think the gap between midfield and striker has been a problem in this tournament so far.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy most comfortable dropping deep, picking up the ball, and turning with it. Not necessarily back to goal. Yeah. If you want to play – but here's the thing about Jesus Ferreira. He's going to be most effective with guys running off of him. And if you are not going to go back to playing with a couple of wide forwards, and that would – he could play for a 3-4-3. He could choose to do that, Jared. It removes a body from midfield. I'm not a big fan
I think he's in the, he's good in the 3-5-2 as well. I think Jesus Ferreira could be good in the 3-5-2.
Really?
A combination 1-2 player with Zardes or DK up front.
I could see that, I suppose. I could see that. Certainly, Ricardo Pepi has benefited from Ferreira being in the lineup with him.
That was the other one that I was going between. I just decided to go with Jesus Ferreira, though, but I was really close to saying Pepi as well.
Yeah, Pepe's very young. There is, okay, I don't really want to mention this, but I'm going to, because it's still a factor. The bubbling conversation about dual nationals never really goes away. It's always sort of there, Jared. Like, it's like, I don't know. It's like a place where a zit keeps popping up and you don't know why it keeps happening and it goes away and it comes right back. We're always talking about the dual national thing. And Pepe is one of those players who has Mexico eligibility. And hey, I don't like predatory caps. I don't like capping guys just so you can cap them and lock them down, especially if you're not positive about their national future. I think they should get the choice. But you would kill two birds with one stone. You call in Ricardo Pepe and play him, right?
I mean, but they have to say yes. Right.
This is true. So he would have to say yes.
And there's this thing, and I get it because when you look at Mexico right now, this is pretty much their full team, and they're struggling in this tournament. Yeah. There is a 2017 pre-2018 US World Cup vibe going on with this team right now.
A little bit. Now I want to be fair. Okay.
Which makes it, but listen, I want to make my point real quick. If I'm Jesus Ferreira, Ricardo Pepi, Julian Araujo, I'm like, ooh, that door looks like it's swinging open for someone. And who knows how much Tata Martino may be gone if this tournament goes the wrong way.
That's a possibility, which I think would change the equation for those players. But you're right in the fact that, hey, maybe there are spots to be had because Mexico's dealing with some problems. Now, again, I wanted to be fair to this particular version of Mexico. Obviously, Chucky Lozano went down with the injury in the first game. You also, Raul Jimenez is only just coming back playing with Wolves after his long layoff. Who knows if he's going to be the old Raul Jimenez? We don't know yet.
But I'm talking more about the swagger, Jason. Does that team look confident like the way you usually see Mexico play?
No, they don't. And give El Salvador some credit. Give Hugo Perez some credit for that team. You're right.
There's I'm nervous about that World Cup qualifier.
Well, it might be played in the United States.
If it's in DC, I'm not as nervous. But they did really well. I mean, look at the what they had come out. Was it in Dallas? Was that where that game was?
Yes, it was. They showed up in Dallas. The fans did, for sure.
That was a huge turnout.
Yeah. All right. So, we settled.
I'm going Mueller and Ferreira and Kessler. You're going with what?
I would go with Kessler. I'm going to agree on Mueller. You do need a pure winger out there. And I'm going to say, since I just want to see the kid, and I know, look, again, it's the tenor of this tournament, give me Caden Clark. If he's fully recovered from his appendectomy and he's playing.
I was assuming he couldn't come. That would make it tough for me, you know, but I can't begrudge he's wanting to see that. That would be fun.
All right. All men's national team to this point, but I think we have to mention what happened in Atlanta this weekend. With Gabriel Inse getting fired after, 13 games in charge, Jared? I mean, Atlanta, they started out so well. What happened? What went down?
It looks like Joseph Martinez and him did not get along, and I'm not sure what the reasoning was. There's been just, I think in the last couple of days, there's been talks about, at Heinz's club before this, talks about players having eating disorders because they made them lose so much weight. Now no water breaks at practices, There's some kind of disturbing stuff that's come out in the last couple of days, but wouldn't you think that Carlos Bocanegra would have done his homework a little bit?
Yeah, that's the thing that's bothering me, is that – and I talked to Doug Robertson of the Journal Constitution today on my radio show, second mention for that, and he said maybe the pandemic really restricted their ability to meet with Inse and talk about all this stuff. But you have to do research. You have to interview people who know him. You have to get recommendations. You have to talk to people who know him. This is not new in terms of his attitude about treatment of players.
Frank de Boer was sucking before COVID. You know, they'd known for a while they were going to have to make a move.
You know? Yeah, I just think it's really – it's complete dereliction of duty on the part of
Here's the question. Does Carlos Bocanegra have to go too?
Maybe at some
point. This is two bad hires.
Yeah, I think Bocanegra sees the season out at the very least, but if they don't get the next one right, if they don't make the playoffs and make a run, Bocanegra may be out. And by the way, that's going to sully the good name of the Inland Empire. I just want to tell you that. Like, you have a reputation to uphold. He's your boy out there.
I know that. I played high school ball against that dude. Like,
yeah. You got to call him up and see what's going on. Like, give him a – you got to text.
He played offense back then, but a formidable player. Oh, my God. Like, he was so big on the field. Let's see. I would definitely – I don't know. Do you think they'll bring an interim coach, or do you think they'll have a coach in before the end of the season, or do you think they wait till the offseason to make the move?
They're talking about bringing somebody in permanently before the end of the season. When they had their press conference about
What if Mexico botches this? Tata Martino gets fired. Do you bring him back?
I think they would try, but I don't think Tata comes back. I don't think he wants to come back. And I think he does also, after everything that's happened, probably doesn't want to come back. Although I have heard that Frank DeBoer would be interested if Atlanta wanted to bring him back. I have a suggestion, but I was shot down on this by people that know. Because of the lack of experience. I said Gonzalo Pineda, who's been lined up for a job for a couple of years now. It just hasn't happened for him. He nearly got the DC job. He wanted to bring his own guys. DC said no. Atlanta will pay for his guys to come. They got more money than DC. If Pineda looks like the next MLS coach in waiting after being an assistant for a while, for the best team in the league the last couple seasons in Seattle, why wouldn't you give him a shot? He knows the league. He's obviously got the Spanish language skills, the background. Why wouldn't you give Gonzalo Pineda a shot?
I'm more of a Ezra Henderson guy. I think Henderson, Easy's been on the block for a long time. Maybe he's happy in Seattle. Maybe he doesn't want this. I don't know. But another name I'm going to throw out there, we just talked about. Do you wait till next season if you get maybe someone like Hugo Sanchez, seeing what he's doing with El Salvador? Do you try to bring an American name back to the U.S. and give him an MLS shot?
Well, you did that thing that I've been trying to avoid for a long time. You said Hugo Sanchez.
Did I say that?
Yes. Yeah, another guy with no MLS head coaching experience, though. And international doesn't always translate. And I wonder. I'm not against it from my perspective, but you wonder if Atlanta would really give the keys to the car. This is why I was shot down on Pineda, because he doesn't have MLS experience. He doesn't have head coaching experience, managerial experience.
Well, here's the thing about Hugo Perez. He was the coach of the youth coach for many of these guys that you're in love with right now. That U.S. national team is. He coached the U-15s in 2012 to 2014. You know, a lot of these guys that are hitting their strides right now, the Pulisics, the Adams, the McKinneys, they're right in that wheelhouse
does that have to do with Atlanta? I mean, I know they've got some bellows and young talent coming through, but what does that matter? They want to go win championships, and they're going to go out. They're going to go down to South America and Paraguay and Uruguay and all these places, and they're going to sign players. And yes, maybe Hugo Perez can be a guy to connect with those players, but maybe not. And again, no experience as a manager at the club level, at the senior level. I think that matters.
Okay. And listen, Gonzalo Pineda, I think, is a great shout as well. Easy. I'm a big fan of Easy. Would love to see him. I thought the Toronto job might have been good for – it might be good for Easy, to be honest with you. That's the one I was kind of looking at. But he's not a name. And listen, what else we'll say about Toronto, Atlanta? Credit to both of them for trying to be winners. You know, making the quick move. You know, I don't think Chris Armas was ever the winner hire to begin with, but – they have a track record of recent history of winning. So does Atlanta. And they don't want to be on the downside. They don't want to start the rebuild. They want to win. And they're not going to accept losses. So there's a lot of coaches in this league. They've had – look at how long DC United settled with Ben Olsen. They were okay with losses, you know?
Yeah.
A storied team that should have expected more from their coach. And I think Toronto and Atlanta are not trying to go down that path.
I did have somebody respond. When I said that Atlanta was a disaster – I had a Chicago Fire fan respond to me and said, well, at least they're doing something. At least they're trying. At least it looks like they're making moves to get better. Obviously, Atlanta's got a championship trophy in their case, where Chicago's last one is, you know, 20-plus years ago at this point. So I think a recency effect is part of this too. But he's got a point that there are teams in MLS who are going to be like, you know what, we don't want to pay that guy's contract for the rest of the year. We, without him on the job, we'll just see what happens. And there's long been – a safety net. You make the playoffs, you get a chance to make a run. That's good enough. maybe that's not good enough anymore. Certainly it's not good enough in Atlanta because there was always a chance they could turn it around. Well, okay, it's not just about performance. We obviously know now that Ince was also doing crazy stuff, Peter Novak-style stuff with the water and no days off and violating the CBA. Once you violate the CBA, it actually gives the club an out. The results on the field were bad.
I don't think they have to pay him out his contract once he does
that's
that,
what
right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, obviously, Atlanta looks at the record and goes, well, we wouldn't mind a change. Maybe we want to fire him. Oh, but we got to pay him to go away. And I don't think his contract is small by MLS standards for a manager. Oh, but he violated the CBA. Well, now we have an out. We can't really keep him around because it's going to come back and bite us, the CBA violations. So let's get him out of here. Oh, and by the way, we don't have to pay him. You know, fresh start, I guess.
What do you think about Nashville scoring 5 goals? The defensive team that barely got anything done last year and having the second fastest hat trick is in MLS history.
I think that Nashville is better attacking-wise than last year by a significant margin. I think Enny Mukhtar is a good DP signing in a league where we've had a lot of bad DP signings, names you didn't know when they came to the league. And I didn't know Enny Mukhtar that very well before he arrived.
No.
I think he's shown something. I think I'm changing my mind a little bit about Gary Smith. But I also think that that they beat up on a bad team. I know Chicago has shown a little bit recently, Jared, but that's a bad team. And Krapelhoff, I accidentally called him Krapelhoff on the radio today, and it works. Krapelhoff. That was a Krapelhoff performance.
Yeah, I think Chicago, I mean, Rafael Wicki may come back from a unfortunate family matter he's having to deal with right now in Switzerland to some more unfortunate stuff. Maybe his situation buys him a few more weeks to see if he can do something. And I think they have looked better over the last 3 weeks. I do, outside of this game. And maybe you give this game a wash because the head coach wasn't there. But Nashville's looking a little bit classy. I'm not even going to lie. I think I understand they're playing a bad team. I think they look a little bit classy. And I'm kind of stoked for them because you saw last year they took the path a lot of expansion teams do, where it says be solid in the back, be solid through the spine, grind out points. And I think this year they're evolving. And I think it's really interesting to see that they've started with that concrete back and they're picking pieces out front. And speaking of some people that have brought folks in and picking some pieces to do more, what do you think about Brenner for Cincinnati?
Well,
starting to finally shine a little bit, right?
Yeah, he's cooking a little bit, but obviously defensively they're a disaster too because they gave up a 2-goal lead against Montreal and ended up losing that game. But I saw some nice things. I mean, he scored. It wasn't a back heel. It was kind of like a side-footed finish to the back post, like redirection, very, very sneaky little finish. I love that finish. I thought it showed that kid is a pure goal scorer. That's the kind of goal that only somebody who has a very distinct nose for the goal scores. So
that's a confidence goal too. I think you're going to come into the next game, 2 goals, one of them being a goal like that. I think this might be the start of something. But to your point, I feel like they're kind of like the Galaxy under Zlatan. They're only going to win if they can win 4-3.
Yeah, they got to fix whatever. And Jeff Cameron didn't play in that game, Jared. Do you know why?
There was a rally in D.C.?
No, because he didn't get the vaccination that is required to travel to Canada to play in that match.
I'm not crying for him.
Okay. I just wanted to put that out there. Everybody go get vaccinated, please. The variant is out there. And by the way, it's called a variant, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that very much dovetails with my Loki watching. You're not watching Loki, right?
No, I'm not a big Marvel guy.
We talked about this. Yeah, you're boring.
I watched Black Widow, though, but I was just like, it was okay.
Okay. Well, I mean, so like, go watch the whole series of 27,000 movies to be connected, to follow all along. Either the shows are connected to the other shows and all that. Anyway, just thought I'd mention that.
I'm trying to keep up with Star Wars and I can barely do it.
I should also mention that, because we're going to wrap this up, when we reconvene next week, and I will have to be doing the same exact setup that I'm using now, so probably no live show. We'll figure it out. When we reconvene next week, we will have new Ted Lasso to discuss, Jared.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to see if it's a bonus show or not. But
Yeah, we'll have to figure out what we're doing for Ted Lasso and the new season.
I will be current.
Yes. I will let you – I want you to know that I was offered screener access and I passed.
Why?
Because I wanted to stay current with you and the rest of the besties. I didn't want to be out ahead.
I think you just wanted to flex on me that you got screener access. It wasn't even important enough to you.
Maybe. Maybe that's what you like. Like when you're around the house and you walk into the bedroom and you're like, I just took out the trash without being asked.
Oh, yeah. That makes up for all the laundry you did.
Whatever it is. Yeah, whatever that is. All right. Well, this was fun. I hope the besties enjoy it. Apologies for no live show. We'll try to get back to that as soon as we can. It might be a little while. Jared, happy anniversary. I know that's where you were this past weekend. So
thank you,
I
sir.
Appreciate
that. I appreciate you making time.
That. Yeah. Jared Dubois off doing derelict things with his wife. Drinking a lot of alcohol, it looked like. Just
there
a
was
lot.
A lot of alcohol and a lot of really good food.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that last word was going to be different. Okay, all right. Shout out to the.
I can only say from my end it was good. You'd have to get her on the bonus show to tell you if she was enjoying it for her.
One day the wives are going to be on the bonus show. We'll figure that out.
It'd be a lot easier to get my wife than yours.
That's probably true. We'll be in negotiations at some point. All right. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll talk to you guys next week. See you then. Bye. You're best.